This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Contraction pains.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiotakis. As part of the fallout from this rough-and-tumble financial crisis, there are gauges of just how bad or good things are. One number that gets a lot of attention is the GDP, gross domestic product. It shrank, contracted by 0.5%, actually worse than previously thought. We hear today from President-elect Barack Obama. Again, he's made more appointments to his economic team, and we'll talk more about stimulus. And Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson is looking at consumer debt securities and what could be done to open up more consumer markets, credit markets. We're joined by Marketplace's Steve Henn in Washington. Steve, what can we expect?
Well, we expect that Paulson's going to announce a new program that is designed to pump billions of dollars into the market for consumer credit card debt, student loans, and car loans. You know, earlier this year, the private market for consumer debt was pretty much frozen. It used to be that banks and investors would buy up bundles of credit card debt or car loans, and that pumped money into credit card companies and auto finance companies and ultimately brought interest rates down and made it easier for all of us to borrow money. When investors got spooked, that whole system began to break down, interest rates started going up, and that's made a rough economy even worse.
So this is all about credit, right? How's this going to work?
Well, the idea is that the Treasury Department's going to kick in about $10 or $20 billion. And this is, at this point, just speculation. But chances are good that the Federal Reserve will have a much bigger stake in the program, maybe $100 billion or even $200 billion. One of the interesting things that's going on in Washington right now is that folks at the Treasury Department have realized that $700 billion bailout package, which is now almost half gone, really isn't big enough to solve the nation's economic problems. So increasingly, when they're doing things like bailing out Citibank a second time or trying to get this program started, they're relying more on the Federal Reserve to come up with most of the cash.
Marketplace's Steve Henn reporting from Washington. Steve, thanks.
Sure.
All right. Also in Washington, the U.S. Chamber of Commerce goes forward today with a campaign about unions. It wants to accentuate that things are worse in union states. Marketplace's Dan Gretsch has that story.
The U.S. Chamber report is titled Responding to Union Rhetoric. Chief author Randall Johnson says the report is being released ahead of an Obama administration that's likely to be sympathetic to unions.
Preemptive strike, that's probably too strong of a word, but it's our effort to make sure our side of the story gets out there.
The report attacks the widely accepted statistic that wages have not kept up with increased worker productivity. It adds up salary, benefits, and retirement contributions and finds that total compensation has in fact kept pace.
It's phony. That's not the way that anybody in the non-Alice in Wonderland world would do it.
Jonathan Tessini is with Labor Research Association. He says economists for decades have tracked productivity with wages, not total compensation. The U.S. Chamber's response?
Unions tend to drive up wages higher than productivity levels justify.
Johnson says the Detroit automakers are uncompetitive in part because of high union wages. I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
World markets are basically up. Overseas, the FTSE and DAX and Paris CAC 40 seeing modest gains today. In Asia, markets were up 2 to 5%, although the Chinese market was a tad lower. The Dow is coming off of a two-day rally that's added more than 900 points since Friday. We'll see what transpires today on Wall Street. According to the Beatles, money can't buy me love, and I still can't buy the Beatles on iTunes. Where's the love there? There once was some hope. There's a Beatles music video game coming out next year, and some had thought the band might go digital in other ways. But Paul McCartney says a dispute involving his former label EMI is keeping the Fab Four out of iTunes for now.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by the Society for Human Resource Management, meeting the challenges of a changing world, online at shrm.org. By CSX, whose trains move a ton of freight 423 miles on 1 gallon of fuel to help reduce emissions. CSX, how tomorrow moves. And by Gather.com. If it's happening in the world, it's being discussed on Gather. You can join the conversation at Gather.com.
There are myriad of economic stimulus packages floating around Washington, and you'll likely hear about one issue in the debate, wage growth. Like everything else in D.C., there are two sides to the story, to the debate. The Democratic side, wages are down for the poor and middle class, and the Republican side, wages are up for the middle class. Who's right? Economist and commentator Justin Wolfers says it's all about the data.
The Republicans are describing the income of the average person, and that average income has risen by 10% since the year 2000, which is an okay, if not stellar, rate of progress. The Democrats focus instead on the typical household. Think about lining up all the households, from poorest to richest, and choose the income of the household in the middle. Economists call this median household income. You might call it middle-class income. Unfortunately, the income of this middle household has fallen since 2000, and it is now about $50,000. It's pretty unusual for the living standards of the middle class to decline like this. Now, you might have a different definition of the middle class, but I have sliced and diced the data, and unless you want to start counting millionaires, you can't escape the conclusion that middle-class incomes have declined. How can the typical household be suffering economic decline when average incomes rose? It's simple arithmetic. If someone earns 20 times as much as you, the average income statistics give them 20 times greater weight than you. Since 2000, the average income of the bottom 99% of all taxpayers fell, while the incomes of the richest 1% grew. But the richest 1% are 20 times richer. So their rising incomes largely offset the falling incomes elsewhere. So it turns out that Republicans and Democrats are each telling the truth, just different truths. Which truth you care about may depend on just where you stand in the pecking order.
Justin Wolfers teaches at the University of Pennsylvania's Wharton School of Business. Hey, we're online, podcasting too. You can check out marketplace.org. Hope to see you there. In Los Angeles, thanks for joining us here. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Have a great Tuesday.
American Public Media. The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.